Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon on this, the final show before Christmas. And Gordon Fricke is nice enough to be here during a very busy time of the year. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick, New York. He's been in the auto repair game since way back in 1979. At Factory Mechanics Training School in Wolfsburg, Germany, an expert on foreign and domestic cars. Always nice to have Gordon back with us. You can call at 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or via Twitter, WAMC Vox Pop, that's all one word, WAMC VOXPOP, or on our Facebook page, WAMC Radio. Or you can go to our website, WAMC.org, and click on the Vox Pop link. And engage in a conversation right there on that page. So, the number to call the old-fashioned way, 1-800-348-2551. Gordon, welcome back to the show, and happy holidays to you.
Thank you, Ray. Same to you.
So, you heard the weather forecast at the end of Patrick's newscast that there is a good possibility of some snow, at least in parts of our region, over tonight and into tomorrow. So, it got me thinking about how rotten some of the driving is as soon as a flake flies. And, you know, you mentioned to me before we started the show that this is a very busy time of the year. And I just wondered, aside from salt and things like that, why is this a busy time for you?
Well, as we've spoken on previous shows, there's a lot of emphasis on tires this time of the year. People really take a good look at the tire condition or think about it and ask shops or people, what should I do? Should I put on snow tires? Are these all-season tires adequate for the winter? If the car is all-wheel drive, can I get away without putting snows on? And what takes people by surprise is usually that first real accumulating snow, and people are usually driving too fast, and the slippery roads sneak up on you, and you're either spinning in the ditch or hopefully not, but maybe cracked up into a little accident.
Yeah. Of course, you know, I would rather have 6 inches of snow rather than some sleet.
Yeah.
It's much tougher to navigate in ice.
The sleet and the slush and of course, black ice is really the worst thing you can run into.
1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to the phones. Brian in Red Hook. Brian, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 2008 Volkswagen Rabbit where the passenger door locking mechanism with the key fob, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't for locking the door. And I was just wondering if you have heard of that before, or is it a common... It seems to be a common problem looking out on the web.
Brian, is this only affecting, did you say, the passenger door?
Yes, the passenger door only.
And the driver's door locks and unlocks properly with both the key fob, and can you use it manually from the inside?
Yes, but the trying to inside on the passenger door, the it does not lock or unlock.
So manually from the inside, you still can't operate it.
Well, manually using the push button. The only way, once the door is locked, the only way to lock it is to, or to unlock it is to pull the door latch to open the door.
Okay.
But the electronic buttons that lock and unlock it will not unlock it.
Okay. It's not an uncommon problem. When you do attempt to lock and unlock it with the fob or the remote, do you see any movement at all as if it's attempting to work, or can you hear noises in that door?
For locking, yes. For unlocking, no.
Okay. This is probably what you need. What's happened to a lot of car manufacturers, they've incorporated the power lock and lock all together in the door latch. And the door latch is inside the door. That's the part that shuts and keeps your door latched tightly on what's called the striker.
Yeah.
You could attempt to lube up everything that you see moving on that latch, and it's a good practice to do on all of your latches. Now, the Rabbits were all two doors, So you don't have...
This was a four-door.
It is a four-door. Okay, most of them were two-doors. I'm sorry. Yeah, so you should, in any case, lube up all of your door latches, including the hatch. But I have a feeling you're going to be having to replace the lock latch mechanism on that passenger door. But
right.
I would try the lubing first and just see what happens.
All right, do you know if, I'm just looking out on the web, supposedly you have to take the door skin off versus taking the door panel off from the inside. You actually take the door skin off of the door to get to it?
What's a door skin?
No, you're talking about the exterior metal door skin?
Yes.
Yeah, no.
Yes.
Funny you say that, because there was some old cars, primarily in the 60s, that had removable doors from the exterior. One of them happens to be a 65 Buick Riviera, which you have some experience with.
You have nice car.
But you really did. You took the door off from the outside apart. But in the case of your Rabbit, you take the inner panel off.
Okay.
Yeah, the upholstery part.
Yep, okay.
So if you're going to do it yourself, just be careful and try not to break things when you take it apart, because you're into door handles and things like that. But it's a job that somebody with decent mechanical skills can handle.
Oh boy.
Okay.
That lets me out. All right, Brian, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Have a good holiday.
You too. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is here. You know what drives me incredibly nuts is when you want to do something yourself with the trim of a car or on the dash, it requires a part. You know, I have this one module, the light module, that's a little balky in mine. It's a little slide switch that lets you know how long the lights will stay on.
Yes.
And so it doesn't work that well. I have to manually turn the lights on. No big deal. But I have the part. I have one that I bought years ago for another 99 DeVille. And I can't get it out because you have to buy the GM or the Cadillac, whatever, trim key or whatever they call it.
The newer cars got, the more hidden the fasteners became. Years ago, you'd see things being held on by screws.
Yeah.
And they were chrome and they looked nice, but you could literally take a lot of stuff apart inside of a car with a screwdriver. Now, all the fasteners are hidden. They're either under little clips or little reveal panels, or you have to pop them out or use a special tool.
And that's what, in this case, I have to do.
And that's then you run into the fear of breaking things.
That is my fear. Yes. Back to the phones we go. Peter in Hudson. Peter, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hi. This is an opportune show for me. I have a 2000 Camry, Toyota Camry, and I need tires on it, four tires, and I've... I'm down in Hudson, here in the Hudson Valley. I go up and down the Taconic Parkway a little bit, so I have to be concerned. That's kind of a dangerous road sometimes when the weather is bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't exactly know what to do. Like I said, I have to replace all four tires. I'm wondering if I should consider these studded snow tires, or if a good quality snow tire is sufficient for the winter. So that's my question.
Yeah, very good question. This time of year, we get a lot of it. And it puts people in a little bit of a quandary, because do you buy four snows now and then have to buy four all seasons in the spring, which is okay in the long term, because you're going to get, twice the tire life potentially out of the one set, because you're taking four off, putting four on. I guess it boils down to, number one, how good the car is inherently in snow. And your car's decent in snow. It's a front-wheel drive car. And how secure you want to be and where you travel. Now, I know the Taconic can get a little nasty.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, right, exactly.
So if you are having to drive in all conditions, if you're commuting or if you don't have the luxury of saying, well, it's a bad day, I'm not going anywhere today, I would recommend four snow tires.
Mm-hmm.
And now you can get studded or non-studded. And they make a studless compound snow tire, which gives you better grip in ice and super hard pack conditions.
Mm-hmm.
You sacrifice a little bit of tread life, but you don't have the noisy studs on the car, and you have better dry road traction and handling. So unless you're doing extreme hilly and mountainous driving and you're going to be in a lot of ice, I don't think you may need the studded. So then you can go studless, or you can go a conventional type snow tire, and you need to do all four so the car remains stable, so the front wheels don't outgrip the rears.
Gotcha. And is that, you mentioned that studless snow tire, that is a slightly different tire than just a standard snow tire?
Yes, yep.
I see.
Studless snows have a different tread compound.
I see.
And they are very nice for the ultimate traction, and they're good on dry roads. And I happen to have four of them on the car my daughter drives.
Oh, well, that's always wise.
Yeah, so, you know, if that tells you anything, I would consider that and or a good conventional snow and do all four.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Peter,
perfect.
Thanks a lot. Now, if you have a front-wheel drive vehicle, you know, can't you just put the front two on?
You can, but the car's not going to handle properly. Your front end's going to out traction the rear.
Yeah.
And you're going to have a loose back end. And
what if you have a traction control? Won't that?
No good. It's not going to help you.
Well, I have more questions, but obviously we're taking a break here. So back in a flash with Gordon Fricke, 800-348-2551.
Support for WAMC comes from East Heaven Hot Tubs in Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering private hot tub room rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs, massage for couples and individuals, eastheaven.com for reservations, Dam Cafe and Deli, Saugerties, New York, serving breakfast and lunch with chef-created soups, salads, vegetarian options, and homemade desserts, catering services available, thedamcafeanddeli.com. The Hudson River Valley National Heritage Area, partnering with 100 heritage sites to interpret and preserve the cultural and natural resources of the Hudson River Valley, hudsonrivervalley.com. And Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing high-efficiency gas and oil heating systems to the Pioneer Valley for over 45 years, now expanding into the Westfield area, richardsfuel.com.
one 800 348 2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551, or you can get us on Twitter at WAMC Vox Pop, or on Facebook at WAMC Radio, or this is new, you can go to our Vox Pop page at WAMC.org and enter into the conversation there. Your comments will be run in and read by our own Patrick Donges if in fact they happen. So Gordon Fricke is our guest, and a special guest in the studio, Emma's here.
Hi.
What brought this on, Gordon Fricke?
Well, Emma is a freshman in college, and she's on her winter or Christmas break. So it looked like she had a little spare time.
Yeah.
So I said, why don't you come to the radio show this afternoon?
I'm glad you did, because I understand the driving skills are not quite up to par. I understand there's some fender benders that Gordon wanted to discuss with you here on the air.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, that's when she said, "Oh no, that never happened. It was a minor one."
Yeah.
Of course, if Pat in the shop's listening, he may not think it was that minor.
I see.
But we did fix it.
All right. And you're a careful driver in general?
Yeah, I try to be really careful.
Because in my neighborhood, the most danger I have is, you know, girls your age whipping around the corner at 45 miles an hour in the 30s.
I try not to do that. I don't think that looks very good. So.
She's not a bad driver, really.
Okay.
Yeah, I.
Well, I would expect that.
Well,
do you?
You got a lot of faith in me.
Do you ever let her drive the 65 Riviera?
When I first got it, these girls were embarrassed to be in it.
What?
Now, Emma's better at...
I wasn't as embarrassed as my other sister.
Why would they be embarrassed to be in a spectacular car like that?
I don't have any idea what these teenagers
today
think.
Oh, my heavens. Well, I'll tell you what. If you have a question for Gordon or Emma, 800-348-2551. Pamela in Pine Plains is on. Pamela, you're here.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes.
All right.
Okay, well, I have a 2004 Jeep Grand Cherokee, and it's been off the road for about a year and a half. My husband died last year, so I have two vehicles. So I'm wondering if I should just, you know, the battery's dead and the tires are going flat, and I'm wondering if I should get it fixed up, get it back on the road, and keep it, or if I should just sell it.
Okay, Pam, what do you have a need or use for the vehicle yourself? In other words, would if this was back on the road and everything in great shape, would you be actively using it, or would it sit around all the time?
It would sit around most of the time.
Okay.
Because we bought a 2011 Jeep Cherokee last year, and the 04 was going to be my commuter car, but I don't need it anymore. So I'm just wondering, you know, if I should get it fixed. Get it all fixed up and try to sell it, or if I should just hold on to it. I don't know.
Well,
I just don't know what to do.
Yeah. I take it it's sitting outside.
Yeah, it's not, I don't have a garage.
Okay. That's very bad for a vehicle. A lot of things happen to a vehicle when it's totally out of use, particularly if it's outside. Let me ask you this. Is it parked on grass, concrete, or, you know, where is it parked all this time?
It's parked on Bluestone driveway.
Okay, yeah, that's better than being out on the grass.
Why?
If you leave a vehicle out on your lawn or in a field year-round, the moisture factor never stops.
Okay.
So it corrodes the heck out of the underside of the vehicle.
Yeah.
But your Jeep sitting that long, no doubt now needs brakes. It might need tires because they've been sitting in the same position for a couple of years. Of course, the battery is dead.
I put a new battery in it myself. I went on YouTube last fall and figured out, you know, watched the video and put it in myself. So it ran. It always did run.
Yeah. The gasoline is going to go stale. A lot of the things are going to deteriorate. So if you don't need it, and you are not attached to it in any reason, if there's no reason to keep it, you definitely should sell it while it still has decent value. Those are good vehicles.
Yeah.
They're very popular.
It is. It was. It got us, you know, all over the place.
How many miles are on it?
It's got about 140. That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, they're pretty sturdy vehicles, but you've got quite a bit of mileage on it. I think I would... you can do two things. You can sell it as it is, advertise it the way it is, and you'll sell it.
Or you could
get it, take it to a shop, get the tires up to pressure, and just do some basic things so it's a running, driving vehicle. Make it more attractive to sell and get a little more money out of it. But I think I would move it because it's gonna deteriorate where it's sitting, and it'll be worth less and less and less every year.
How much do you think it would cost to get that baby on the road and in decent shape?
Boy, it depends on what it needs, Ray. You know, you're definitely talking a battery.
Yeah.
You're probably talking rusty brakes.
Right, so rotors.
Pads, rotors, a battery, and some sprucing up. Let's say the tires are okay. You could be easily putting $500 to $800 in it, you know?
Yeah, all right. I'll buy it, Pam. How about that?
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
I just don't know. Where do I go? What would you do? I mean, I'll get it back on the road, and then how would you sell it?
Well, you can advertise it privately. You can do it on Craigslist. You can go to Want Ad Digest and take out an ad. You can take some digital pictures, and believe me, the phone will ring off the wall for that vehicle.
Yeah, just be careful when you do stuff like that, though, Pam.
Yeah, see, I'm a little scared of
that. I would, you know, it can be done, and it has been done, but you have to keep your wits about you when you go that route. That's all.
Yeah. All right.
Pamela, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke is here with his daughter Emma, and we go to Bob in Kinderhook. Bob, you're on.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, guys. I'm 70 years old, so I come from the old school. I've got an 04 Hyundai Elantra with 95,000 miles on it, and I was wondering if it's time to get rid of it before it starts to cost me money. So far, it's been a great car. I haven't had any major issues, but they tell me after 100,000 miles, trading a car in, you don't get much for it. Just wondering what your thoughts were.
Okay, Bob. Yeah, there is definitely some validity to that. The older they get, the more mileage accumulates, the less the car's worth. Do you want another car, or do you love this one and want to keep it?
Well, so far, it's treated me really well. I'm very impressed. So I guess I'd like to keep it. A friend of mine's got an 05 Taurus with 49,000 miles that a relative had, and he's thinking about getting rid of it because the relative had passed on. And I was thinking about getting that from him and selling this on my own.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what your thoughts are on that.
Well, how have you been with the maintenance on your Hyundai? Is everything completely up to date?
You got it. I do oil changes every 3,500 miles. It's just part of my ingrained business.
Okay. Timing belt has been done then, I assume?
No. See, that should be done next. No, I did not do that.
Because depending on, now this car is an 04, but the last time I checked, Hyundai and Kia have one of the lowest timing belt intervals that I've seen. I think they're every 60,000 miles.
So you're on borrowed time with that.
Well, if it's never been changed, and if that's still the interval, that would be of major concern on this car. Because if it does break, it can do some serious engine damage. So I would definitely look into that and consult your owner's manual. It'll tell you in there when it was due. And a lot of cars now are getting away from timing belts, going back to chains, and there's no maintenance necessary on those. But I would see if everything is up to date on the maintenance, and then it's more a matter of your personal preference if you want to get another vehicle, you know?
Yeah.
How is that Taurus? You know anything about 05 Tauruses?
That vintage Taurus was a pretty good basic car. It was a real volume car for Ford. They didn't have any severe issues by that year. They had a lot of their problems ironed out. So it's not a bad car. It's bigger than what you're driving.
Yeah.
Won't get the gas mileage that you're accustomed to, but maybe that doesn't matter depending on what you do with it, you know?
Yeah.
All right, Bob.
Well, listen. Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys. Have a super holiday now.
Yeah, you do the same. 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. We talk cars here. A reminder that it's Moyers & Company tomorrow, and then we're off on Christmas Eve. There'll be no Vox Pop, nor on Christmas Day. We'll be back with you on Wednesday. Back to the phones we go. It's Ron in Richmond, Mass. Ron, you're on.
Hi, how you doing? Perfect timing. I just got off a ladder. I was painting a ceiling, so kudos to you guys.
Well, all right.
I am sadly looking for a car for my 17-year-old daughter, and I somehow got mixed up with looking at Subarus. And they're everywhere in the Berkshires, so they're a very popular car. However, I found an Outback that was a 2002 with 87,000 miles, and it's incredibly clean as they come. There's very little rust, but there's this funny engine noise that taps when you, it's like a tapping sound when you step on the gas. And I took it to a few mechanics. One guy said it's a perfectly normal sound. Another guy said, you know, don't go anywhere near it because these Subarus apparently had trouble with pistons and I guess the clearance on the valve, where the valve is. And so he did a computer test on it, finding that it didn't skip at all, like it runs perfect. And so I'm getting this real difference of opinion between one Subaru expert who tells me this is a normal sound and other guys that are saying that it sounds very deep down by the, what would it be, the crankshaft or the piston, and that a piston could actually break. Do you know anything about this?
Yeah. Here's the real story on those. On that particular sound. It is an inherent sound with that engine design. And the noise is piston noise, but it's not detrimental. And some Subarus of that vintage were much noisier than others. And a lot of it had to do with the run-of-the-mill parts. Some pistons fit the cylinder better than others. But due to the engine design, and the engine on that Subaru, it's called a boxer engine. The cylinders are laying flat. It's four cylinders, but there's two on each side. If you ever looked at a BMW motorcycle, you see the engine, the cylinder head sticking out. That's the way this Subaru is.
Okay.
So they're a little bit more susceptible to piston noises, I think, because of the flat nature of the engine. Subaru took a lot of criticism over that noise and finally worked it out with different piston and cylinder designs. But I have heard hundreds of them, and it doesn't ever seem to be a reliability issue at all. Some are noisier than others. Some are quite quiet.
And this is all because of vagaries of different manufacturing?
Well, it has to do with the design of the engine. And some are quieter than others just by virtue of the parts that got assembled at the factory. You know, the tolerances might be a little bit looser on the loud one versus the one that's quieter.
But it's generally a situation where they're so the tolerances are so loose that it's going to be a problem?
No, I don't think it ever creates an issue. It's more of an annoyance or a sound issue. So your first guy was correct. The Subaru guy was correct. It's unless it's abnormal and there's something radically wrong with it. But I think the guy that knows Subarus ruled that out for you. Okay. So I would not be worried.
There is a friend of mine who he's a self-proclaimed Subaru expert.
Ah, good.
And, you know, so I take everything he says with a grain of salt. But he said that the noise seems very deep down inside, as opposed to a more surface type of sound, which would be like a lifter. I think he used the word a lifter, making a sound at the top.
Yeah, I know the sound that you're hearing and he's describing, and it is definitely not way up top like a valve noise. It's in the middle, towards the bottom of the engine.
Yeah,
but ordinarily that's not an issue with these cars.
Okay.
Okay. And one more thing. The guy said he would give me a 6-month guarantee on the engine. Is that that's a pretty good sign?
Yeah, absolutely. That means he feels, and I sell Subarus and I hear these noises and I've never run into it being a critical issue.
Hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Hey, Ron, thank you very much. 1-800-348-2551. You can in fact check in via Twitter at WAMC Vox Pop, or on our Facebook page, WAMC Radio, or on the WAMC Vox Pop page. You go to our website, WAMC.org, and you click on Vox Pop, and there you go at the bottom of the page. Jim in, where are you, Jim?
Simsbury, Connecticut.
How are you doing?
I'm well. How about you?
Good. You're on.
Thank you. My question is somewhat aligned to the earlier one about car storage. I have 3 sons and a daughter-in-law, all of whom are captains in the good old U.S. Army, and all of whom periodically go off to deployments for 9 months or a year. And, you know, long ago when I was a youth, if you were going to store a car, you pulled the spark plugs and squirted oil in each cylinder and, you know, blocked up the tires and things like that. And for a period like that, I wonder what the recommendations are. Your guest recommendations would be for storing a vehicle like that. And I also have a camper, which we use on occasion. You know, it's a motor home, I guess, just a little one. And the tires on it are in good shape, but like 10 or 11 years old. And I wonder if the age really affects the tire life. They have like 30,000 miles on them. But, you know, in thinking about the kids' cars, you know, finding the spark plugs is a pain.
True enough.
No, you're absolutely right.
So that's my overall question, and I'll take any information I can get from you.
Sure. Okay. There's a variety of things you can do to store a car, and some are very extreme. It depends on how long it's going to be out of service, where it's stored. But if the car's going to be out of the picture for 6 to 9 months, maybe to a year, very important to have the fuel stabilized, you know, put something in the gas and have the tank close to full. So when you have condensation occurring, you're not getting water droplets inside the gas tank. So you need to use a very good fuel stabilizer that goes into gasoline. It's advisable to have the oil changed before it gets stored for that period of time, just to get all the contaminants, and there might be some trace, you know, acids and things like that, moisture in the oil that would like to be drained out. Ideally, inside, away from the sun. The sun's very hard on a vehicle. Battery would be nice to have removed, or you can buy a battery tender, and it clips onto the terminals and keeps the battery at the right voltage at, the whole time it's being stored.
You have to plug that in the wall?
Yeah, you plug it in the wall. So, again, that's, you know, that's a long time to have it plugged in, but it's not drawing current the whole time, only now and then when the battery needs to be topped up. Tires, at the very least, should be inflated higher than usual. You don't want to exceed their maximum pressure, but that way you hope to prevent flat spotting of the tires. So, at the very least, I would do those things with those vehicles. And as to the camper tire question, that's a very good question because most campers or motorhomes get tires changed long before they're worn out. They crack, deteriorate, ozone attacks the rubber, the sun beats them up. They should be covered. The light is not good for tires. So that's why I see a lot of these campers or motorhomes with these big covers over all the tires. That's to keep the sun off of them. Same thing, increase the pressure. And there are some products you can spray on them that's like a sunblock for tires.
Oh, great idea.
So that's about it.
Jim, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yep. So Jim's question brought to mind some old family information. Now, of course, I come from a long line of people who know next to nothing of cars. But my father always said, in the wintertime, it's best to keep the tank almost full. Why would that be, or is it just not true?
Well, I think it's the condensation issue, because we've all seen when the weather radically changes, and you'll see moisture on windows, for example. It was warm today, and it got radically cold the next day, and your windows have a film of moisture on them. That same thing happens inside your gas tank. So you don't want that getting in with your gas, and then when it turns violently cold, freezing up and freezing your gas lines.
That explains it.
So he was right.
Okay, let's take a break here. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, your calls. More of them coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from St. George's School of Clifton Park, New York, a private elementary school offering full-day academic programs to kindergarten and first-grade students, stgeorgecp.org. Godfrey Financial Associates, Latham, New York, providing retirement planning and wealth management services for baby boomers and beyond, independent, woman-owned, established 1995, godfreyfinancial.com. Time in the Country, B&B Hudson, offering holiday tea with home-baked cakes, cookies and tea, sandwiches from 12 to 3:30 every Saturday and Sunday in December, an eco-friendly B&B, timeinthecountrybnb.com, and TSL Time and Space Limited in Hudson, New York, screening classic movies Thursdays through Sundays, including The Lady Vanishes, December 21st at 8 p.m., timeandspace.org.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. Gordon Fricke, our guest. It's our car show for the month of December. And boy, December coming to an end fast. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go over to Marie in Schenectady. Hi, Marie.
Hi. I've waited a long time to talk to Gordon Fricke.
I'm sorry.
No. I meant this is my overall driving a Volkswagen, a German car.
Oh.
Volkswagen Passat. Yeah, I have a 2002, low mileage because I got sick. Didn't put a lot of driving on it. I still have it. It's a good running car. But Gordon, explain to me, if you will, other than mentioning about condensation in the gas tank, which I'm aware of, what are we talking about? Where I had numerous times, because the gas tank, which was the original equipment, and then I had to have it. Well, let me express it this way: check engine light would come on, and I'm thinking, what in the heck can that be? So, ascertaining and determining after many years of driving, it was indeed that the gas cap, the original equipment gas cap, was not attached. Properly, and it clicked in with the sensor, the check engine light. So kind of tell me what happened there. Now, because my present mechanic could not get original equipment Volkswagen, we went with a gas cap, and it's fine. And up to the time that I had been in his shop. Again, within a day, the check engine light came on. So I said, let's be sure even that gas cap is on tight. So what's going on? Does it have some relationship to evaporation and or, you know, the check engine, the sensor, the electronic equipment in the car, what?
Extremely common occurrence and popular question. The check engine light can come on for probably 60 or 70 different reasons, maybe even more. The federal government really initiated an enhanced onboard diagnostic system for cars in 1996. And that check engine light is watching, or the computer's watching, a lot of different things. And the reason the light comes on is there is the potential for abnormal emissions to be emitted from your vehicle, either out of the tailpipe or out of the gas tank venting system. So every time your check engine light comes on, it should be scanned and determined what the reason the light is on for. And it could be a gas tank venting issue, but it could be a whole bunch of other things.
What are some of the other for instances? I'm aware of the venting. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you could have a variety of sensors going out of range or failing. Oxygen sensor, crankshaft position sensor.
Yes.
There's a whole bunch of things. Anything that could potentially emit too much pollution.
Screw up the emission system.
Yeah. So it may not be your gas cap all these times.
Oh.
Unless you're getting it scanned and it's coming up with an evap leak.
It didn't go on again after this time. We had within a few days, I said, well, what the heck? The check engine isn't popping up on the dash.
Well, the computer takes a little bit of time to do these self-tests. So when you clear the light, it's not uncommon for that light to be out for 1, 2, 3, 4 days until that system gets rechecked. So it's very important to get it tested to make sure you're not doing things that it doesn't need.
The check engine didn't come on. I was all set to go back in. Hey, the check engine light's on again. So what didn't you do? Or let's look at some more possibilities, just as you described it, Gordon.
Right.
Does it correct itself? It didn't come on again. I'm talking 3 weeks or more.
Okay. If the light has been out for 3 weeks or
No. It hasn't come on. I know the flashing is don't drive.
Yes.
There's no check engine light.
Then that's a good sign. That means the computer ran its tests and it's satisfied everything's good.
God is with me. Thank you. I got one other question to ask.
Okay.
Give me a surmising or whatever. What the heck is the air plenum? I kind of know what its function is, but Volkswagen was guilty with going way back to 1998. My car was among them where the whole damn brake system went down.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I was under the warranty because we both know what that costs. Okay, and I just happened to get sick. I'll leave that part out. But what happened was they couldn't fix it. They did, and then Volkswagen had come out prior to that in 07 with a service bulletin, make sure you keep that air plenum cleaned. And I tried every which way to get into the damn service shop to look at, you know, we're talking trees, yes, Schenectady, Troy and all the environs up here has plenty of trees.
Yeah.
So indeed, what had happened, the free flow of what? The air and the mixture to keep the engine perking, but the check engine light come on, and it was, the brake system was down, so it's don't drive the car. I had to have it towed. So, but what happens? I said to the guys in the Volkswagen shop, which is new ownership now on Central Avenue.
And
I said, what precisely happened other than the environmental debris, the weather conditions? This was in 08, February 08, and the icing and trying to diagnose it on the machine, coming up with a fix. The brake system was down.
All right.
So what?
Well, the assurance I got was,
yeah, we widened a hole. And have it checked every once in a while to see that it's clean. So what's the story?
That condition didn't affect that many cars at all. I ran across that bulletin a bunch of times, but yes, it had to do with
They got a class action suit out now. A lot of people settled for $10,000. It's still out there.
Yeah, well, those things float around all the time. I see them in the mail a lot, and a lot of times it's just bandwagoning. There's, you know, nothing ever really happens.
Right.
But Gordon, why wasn't it a big issue then? Because for me, it was.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. No, I just said I've never really encountered that, but I'm not a dealer, so I don't see the volumes of these cars coming in.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it had something to do with blocking the having to do with the power boost part of the braking system.
That's it. That's what went down. That's yeah. it.
So you
yes.
had, so you didn't lose your brakes, but you had to step on the pedal five times as hard to get the car to stop.
Yeah.
I had to replace all the brakes. It was a warranty under warranty.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, I didn't encounter many of those,
So the system itself, as it exists, it's okay.
Oh yeah.
But alas, not just as you say, not too many, have come to your attention.
No,
right?
And after getting that recall done, they corrected the problem, so I wouldn't be worried.
They did.
About
okay,
it.
Marie, thanks
okay.
a lot for the call.
Thank you an awful lot, Gordon.
You're welcome.
Bye now. Have a great holiday, Trish in East Hampton. Trish.
Oh, hello.
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 Hi.
Hi.
I have a lucky problem. I am going to be able to buy a car in January. It has to cost under $20,000. And I've been looking at Consumer Reports. I've been looking on the Internet. There always seems to be a trade-off and something on each car, and I'm kind of going the new or the used route. You know, I have friends in different camps. It seems to have narrowed down between Honda or Hyundai, but new, used, do you have any?
Oh, that's good.
Any ideas?
Yeah.
I have no idea because, of course, car salespeople are, they're there for their particular.
All right. Well, there are some fine people who sell cars, just to put that out there.
Yeah.
I mean, some nice, honorable folks. But what do you think, Gordon?
Well, you've got a healthy budget. I mean, for the car you're desiring, if you said, I'm interested in a Audi A8L, new, no, that's not going to happen. But if you've got a budget of up to 20 and you're thinking about a Honda or a Hyundai, you're in great shape. As far as the comparison between the Honda and the Hyundai, the Honda is most definitely a better automobile in terms of quality and workmanship and lifespan. If you're looking for the best bang for the buck, my opinion would be to search for a Honda.
Okay.
And then it depends on what size car and what your needs are.
Right.
Civic, Accord, CRV, if you want a little sport utility. And my advice is get the newest and lowest mileage that your budget will allow you to afford.
Okay.
And then you're going to have to see what you like, what car fits you the best.
Okay. Trish.
Thanks very much.
Congratulations on your tough problem there. That's great.
Thank you very much.
We'll talk to you next time. It's a Don in Longmeadow, Mass. You're on.
Hello, Gordon. Don Campbell here.
How are you?
I got a question about my summer girlfriend, a 1972 Volvo 1800E. It's got about 80,000 miles on it, and it's tuned to factory specs. I've swapped out the points for the Petronix magnetic ignition, and my problem is I've got very high idle, about 1,200 RPMs, and I've got low gas mileage at around 11 to 12 miles per gallon. I've heard it might be a vacuum leak, but I don't know.
Okay, that's
now,
a good
one. 1972.
Yes.
Is this fuel injected or still a carburetor?
That's a Bosch. That's why the designation E. That stands for the Bosch. I think it's a. I'm not sure right now.
It's one of the early electronic ignition injection systems.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Your question is, it could be an air leak or a vacuum leak. The question is, can you find it? And if the idle is going way higher than usual, with that car running with the hood open, have you poked around to see if you can notice any hoses off or making any hissing sounds?
I don't see any hoses off, and I have it serviced regularly with a well-trained Volvo, independent mechanic with a real good reputation. So I've never, you know, have never broached the question of the idle leak, although he's aware of the high idle and you know, poor miles per gallon situation.
Yeah, those two could be completely related.
Okay.
And then again, they may not be. That particular system, and like most cars, even today with fuel injection, the way the idle is achieved is by air bypassing the throttle plate.
Okay.
And it is done with a mechanism back in those days, and I'm not sure on that particular system. I was accustomed to a lot of Volkswagen systems of that era. But they bypassed the throttle with a device called an auxiliary air valve. That thing could be stuck open and just making idle too high, having no effect on your gas mileage.
Okay.
So what I think needs to happen is I think your Volvo guy's got to get involved. And, you know, he's going to check all the basic things. He's going to look for hoses off and bad connections and just see, you know, if there's any evidence that that's causing the gas mileage issue.
Okay.
It's a good system, but it's very, very old, you know, by today's standards. But, you know, Bosch was on the forefront of fuel injection.
Okay.
You know, they invented it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Don, thanks a lot.
So it's not an impossible system to deal with.
Very good to hear.
Appreciate the call. So this is an electronic fuel injection, but pre-computerized, right?
Well, no, there is a processor in those old systems.
Wow, 1972?
Yeah, if it's the electronic, which it is, that's what the E stands for. There is a very primitive processor or computer on that car.
All right, let's go to Bruce in Middlebury, Vermont. Bruce, you're on.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
I'm calling you with a great automotive mystery that has haunted me for the last 10 years.
Wow.
So much so that even though I don't have the car anymore, it still haunts me. And the mystery is this. I had a 1996 Honda Civic, and every year around October, November, when the weather started getting cold, the automatic turn signal cancel would stop working. And when the weather warmed up again in April or May, it would start working again. It was kind of like my own personal groundhog.
So the car kind of sensed winter coming.
Yeah, and the turn signal would stop working. You know, you turn it on manually, and like the old days,
wouldn't cancel.
It wouldn't cancel, so you'd turn it off. Yep. But then once the weather warmed up, it worked fine, and it did this for 10 years. And I talked to a couple mechanics about it, and they looked at me like I just been drinking a fifth of Jack Daniels, you know. It's
not
like
a bad idea.
And nobody could ever give me an answer. So the ball's in your court.
Well, the way those directional self-cancel is there, when you put your directional on, a little plastic peg drops down, and that little plastic peg, when you return the wheel to center from that turn, that little peg gets in the way of a device in the steering hub that hits it and turns your blinker off.
Yeah.
Now, it's very possible that when it gets cold, that little peg gets sticky and won't drop down.
Uh-huh.
And or the clearances are so close that when it gets cold, everything slightly contracts and it misses it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now my question to you is, let's say in the middle of the winter, we got a really freak warm up and it was 65 degrees out that day.
Very good.
Did your directionals work in that warm up?
It wasn't fooled.
It wasn't fooled.
It wasn't fooled. It knew somehow. It knew. No.
Still never worked.
It still wouldn't work until we had consistently warm weather.
Wow. I still think that it had to do with that plastic peg either sticking or the minute difference in length due to the temperature caused it to miss its peg where it cancels.
Yeah.
That's all I could think of. And, you know, we used to run into this periodically with a car where the blinkers wouldn't self-cancel. And that's what it was. It had to do with the switch mechanism and that little plastic peg that dropped down.
Yeah. Not the end of the world, though, right?
Not at all. It's just one of those cute little things. I never tried to get it fixed because, you know, I loved the car. It was a quirky little car, and that just added to the romance of the vehicle.
You know, if you still had the car, my recommendation would have been to drive it to Florida.
And then test it.
And try it down there for a week.
Brilliant.
And see if it was fooled by that.
Right.
I like that. I like that. Well, I don't own it anymore, but I still see it on the road, and it's got 276,000 miles on it now.
Nice. So, yeah.
It's the body on it is shot, but the engine's still running.
Great. Ah, you know, there's an allegory there for all of us. Bruce, thanks a lot for the call.
You're welcome.
You're the last one, and boy, I'll tell you what, if you... are of the persuasion to celebrate Christmas. I hope you have a very Merry Christmas. If not, disregard. And we'll be back with you on the 26th, unless, of course, the world ends tomorrow. I mean, it's possible, right?
We better get home today, then.
You better get, you and Emma better get home. Thanks again for being with us. Support comes from Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing high-efficiency gas and oil heating systems to the Pioneer Valley for over 45 years, now expanding into the Westfield area, richardsfuel.com. Joyelle's Jewelers, Del Mar, New York, specializing in custom jewelry and repairs, laser welding, designer jewelry and gifts, joyellsjewelers.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. Is it Porsche or Porsche?
It's actually Porsche.
I thought it was Porsche.
Yeah, you pronounce the E.
Okay. QFCC.com is Quality Foreign Car Care's website. That's it. Thanks to Zach Malloy. Well done, sir. And also to Fred Smith for answering the phones. Patrick Donges is our producer. Have a great holiday, everybody. We'll see you on the other side.